The good people at Manscaped have partnered with us here at the Beautifully Designed Game podcast with an exclusive offer just for you as a thank you for tuning in. Visit uk.manscaped.com, enter promo code TFT20 for 20% off your order. Believe me, your balls will thank you.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. My name is Marcus Marrett, and today I am delighted to be speaking to and sat next to a man, and I say sat next to with a smile on my face that he can see, because it's the first time ever on this podcast, and it's quite a rarity in recent times, which makes it ever more ideal to be speaking to an incredibly talented man and also one of the nicest individuals you will ever meet and one of the happiest individuals you can ever meet. I'll say that and it comes across in everything he does. Craig Black.
What an introduction.
Well,
that's brilliant.
Well, that's the energy you give out, Craig.
Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm very happy for you to be here. Mm-hmm. Can you let people know who you are, where you live, and or not specifically where you live? That's not necessary.
Do you want my address?
Oh, no, that's not necessary. Thank you. I have your address, I do. Let people know who you are.
Yeah, so I am Craig Black. I'm an artist and independent designer specialising in typography and lettering. My work kind of spans between branding, packaging, installations, murals, artworks, basically anything to do with typography and lettering I kind of play about with. I have a studio in Greenock, which is actually where I grew up. I've actually came full circle because I've been away traveling and working in London, all that jazz, and came back home, which I love.
And can you let people know where Greenock is?
Greenock is, Greenock is about 45 minute drive away from Glasgow. I actually stay in Gourock, which is a little bit nicer.
Oh, right.
Their house is right on the water, and it's a beautiful wee spot, but the studio is in Greenock, which I absolutely love. I went into the studio in January time this year, and it's actually been a catalyst for my career, having that space.
Okay.
And especially in a time that where we've all been consumed by being in the house and working from home, I hugely needed it, because one, me and my wife had a little girl called Olivia.
Oh, fantastic.
She's now 10 months old. She's brilliant. Absolutely amazing and incredible. But as you can imagine, being a dad and also trying to work from home and newborn, all those kind of things, it has been challenging. So to be able to spend a bit more space where I can throw paint about and not get shouted at because I was getting on the couch and all that nonsense. It's been great. Having that studio space, and I'm excited to see where
we're going. Fantastic. And before we go anywhere further, can you let people know where they can find you online?
Mm-hmm. So you can find my work at craigblackdesign.com. I'm on the also social media platforms. Instagram and Twitter is @_craigblack. I'm more active actually on LinkedIn. So if anyone's on there, please connect with me. I would love to say hello to you. Hear more about yourself.
Just picking up on that, with being more active on LinkedIn, I also find myself as a full-time professional illustrator that LinkedIn is ever more working hard for me as any other
Absolutely.
Social media channel in terms of being effective work-wise. Mm-hmm. And you're obviously finding that again, and it obviously is a social media channel that used to kind of have a different perception, and I think it's really good for creatives, no matter what they
Absolutely.
Do, to also hear that from people that make the most of LinkedIn for kind of genuine work.
So LinkedIn has been a huge driver in my work and business. To be brutally honest, I would say even last year, 90% of my work came through LinkedIn during the pandemic. And just to give you an idea why that's happened is like probably about 3 or 4 years ago, a lot of creatives were on Instagram and Twitter, and that's great, and they were showcasing work, and it was always feedback from other creatives.
Yes.
And very seldom I was getting kind of work from those areas. And then I realised on LinkedIn, which was probably even about 3 or 4 years ago, was a very boring and sterile place, and you didn't think about going there because it was just business people or suits in a sense. And that sounds pretty harsh, but that's what I kind of thought. But then I realized that this is the place where I can speak directly to the creative director of this brand or the design of that brand or this agency or whatever. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to double down on my time on that social, on LinkedIn rather than spending time on Instagram and Twitter. And then what I've done is I just like connected with so many people and built up relationships over the years.
Yeah.
And what that does is it builds a relationship, because what people forget to realize is that business is all about relationships, and that's how work comes in the door, whether it's recommendations or someone seeing your work. But because I've in the past 3 or 4 years investing my time into LinkedIn, it's hugely benefiting me now.
Yeah.
So when I post a piece of work, like the reach that I have is far greater than Instagram and Twitter could ever do, because with Instagram and Twitter, when you post something, and this is only me, I don't know the full statistics and analytics of Instagram and stuff, but for me, it's very instantaneous. So you post it and it can disappear within 24 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
It can, don't get wrong, your post will sit on your Instagram page and whatever, but for other people to see it, it might be harder. Whereas on LinkedIn, if I post something today, if someone likes it, then it likes onto their page as well, and it showcases to further engagement. Yeah. And I'll have notification today that people have engaged my work, which I posted nearly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So my analytics are much far greater in reaching to brands and connecting with people who I would love to work with and who I have been working with, which is fantastic. So if there's any creatives on there who are not investing in LinkedIn, I think you really should be and spending time on there. And just because you can find direct sources to brands and people that you would never be able to get to on Instagram or Twitter or even through emails.
Yeah. Sorry to jump in, but I have always found with your work is the presentation of it, which you can understand having a significance because of either the 3D or the installation typography work that you've done, you know, for people to be able to see that in its 3D real world, to the videos of the Fusion series that we'll get onto specifically later on. But do you put quite a significance in how you show and how your work is presented and seen?
Absolutely. It's very important for me to showcase my work in the most professional sense, in terms of process is just as important as a finished product for me. I've devised this kind of technique over the years called the acrylic fusion, and it's essentially mixing together acrylic paint to form interesting patterns and stuff all over various different canvases, products or whatever. But what is the most enchanting part about that is the actual pouring technique and seeing it come alive.
Okay.
And that has been really, really quite engaging. So when I first started developing this, I thought to myself, this is fucking cool. Do you know what I mean? Like the finished product is cool, but the process is just as cool as well, if not cooler.
Yeah.
So I thought, why am I just showcasing the final work? Whereas I can create much more content of the whole project as well. So I started to invest more time into that. So I started off using bloody iPhone on a tripod, filming me while painting. I always like, you'd get my shoulder in the way and cover the screen and all those things.
Yeah.
But it was a starting point. But that was a significant moment for me because I started to realise that people were engaging with the video content of a finished piece of artwork as well.
Okay, yeah.
And obviously over the years, it's become a bit more professional, bringing in a videographer and photographer just to capture that as well, because it's very hard to do it all when you're bloody painting with your two hands.
Yeah.
But especially with the Fusion series footballs, I created so much content for that. that whole project, especially surrounding the whole Euros and the whole time of the Euros. I had a video for one day, amazing photographs for the second day, also pictures of the ball in the making and the ball in the final studio shoot as well. Yeah. So definitely it's been a huge driver, because what I'm now starting to see even more is brands and agencies wanting me to work on these products, sort of brands or whatever they be, but it's very much to want to capture the process as well as see me. So it could be a live performance art now, okay, which is really quite exciting for me, because I had an experience, what I'll speak about with the UEFA project, where people will see me creating the footballs, and the look in their faces, the emotions that was going through them, the excitement.
Yes,
they were shouting and bawling when I was doing this, and I was fucking loving it. Because
let's go to the beginning of the whole Fusion series, really. Describe it to people that have never seen it.
Essentially, the Fusion series footballs are nine footballs, footballs which are an artistic representation of countries' football kits that were playing in the Euros this year.
Okay.
The original plan was to do the 12 host nations that are playing at the Euros, and then very quickly a lot of countries had to drop out due to COVID and stuff. I think Ireland was one of them, and
yes,
then I was like, shit. And then also a couple of the host countries had similar color brands to them as well, so I started to think, right, what countries are already in it in the competition, and what have different colour palettes as well, and what have different patterns to their straps, and what can you do that's just a bit more interesting through the colours and stuff like that. So how did it all begin? So like I said earlier on, I had a new studio, and my career is, like, I started off in graphic design, and I've been specialising in typography and lettering and doing word march for brands across the world and stuff and various other things. But I really love the building of installations and artwork, and this terminology, being an artist, is something that's really been driving me since the very beginning. But I don't want to say I didn't have the confidence, but I basically didn't have the portfolio enough to say that for myself, for my own self-belief more than anything, not to show off or anything like that. So when I got the studio, that was, like I said earlier on, it's like the catalyst for me to go, you know what, I am an artist. I believe in myself to do that.
Yes.
So I remember sitting in the studio, and I was like, Scotland qualifying for the Euros was such an amazing achievement itself. And I thought, I would love to some way celebrate this.
Yes.
And I don't know how it happened, but I thought, imagine pouring paint over a football. How would that look? And I thought to myself, let's just fucking do it. And I'm having these conversations to myself, by the way. I'm saying it out loud in the studio. And I sound crazy when I say that.
Well, I would just talk out loud.
It was like that. I was like, oh, that'd be fucking cool. So I ended up purchasing a few unbranded footballs online, went and got some paints. I started to figure, and while I'm doing this, I'm thinking about the process in my head, how I'll do it, because it's slightly different to what I've done before. And I thought, okay, right, Scotland, obviously, they're the main ones just now. Why don't I try and replicate their kind of brand colours as a strip colours as an acrylic fusion on this football? So I thought, right, put these paints in the measuring jug, and everything's like proportioned and all that. It's not just simply me just chopping paint, and I make it fair. It is such a simplistic thing, but there's a lot of craft to it as well.
Yeah,
the amount of paint I put in, the amount of pressure I put on, pace, the how far away I am from the ball. Like, these are things that I've learned over the past 6 months.
And timing considerations as well, I'd imagine, for how the paint mixes as well.
Exactly. So I did this first pour of the Scotland ball, and I did that, and I turned around going, fucking hell, Craig, this is awesome. This is dynamite. This is really special. And then I get so excited. I'm filming it. I'm showing my wife. I'm phoning, like, my brother. What do you think about this? And I purposely went to a few of my pals who are non-creatives, but love football. And they tell me straight. They'll tell me something shite or something good, right? Yeah. Or that I've done. That's what I love about them. And I showed them this, and I actually set up my camera at the same time, because I honestly had no idea how it would actually turn out. In my head, I've got a vision, but the actual forming and the way it kind of integrated, yeah. I didn't see that happening, really. And when I captured it on my phone at the time, I said to them, like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And I thought, that's feedback I've never had from them before, so I thought, I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
So then I started to think, right, okay, I can do one football, I can do a Scotland ball, and that'd be nice, but the Euros is coming up. Huge, huge kind of opportunity to do something, to use it as inspiration kind of thing. I thought, yeah. Why don't I kind of, rather, everything that I do self-initiated has a commercial purpose, right?
Yes, yeah.
So I don't, for me, self-initiated work is very, very important, because it's a huge driver for work coming in the door.
Yeah.
And that's been at the beginning since I ever set on my work 6-7 years ago.
I have the same approach, yeah.
And it's, so when I've done this football, I thought, right, okay, nice having a football, but how can we kind of monetize it? How can it benefit a brand? How can it inspire a brand even to get it with a wider audience? So this is when I thought about the host nations, and then I thought, right, well, let's do the nine countries, because obviously time was against me as well, because at the same time, I had to finesse my technique. I need to experiment. So I invested a lot of time and energy and money into this project for over 6 months. You see nine footballs, but reality was between 40 and 50 footballs.
Okay.
So, and then obviously buying each football as well is not cheap. So, and then also the paint and all the utensils that I use as well. Like, there was so much going into it. Paying for videography, photography, and I wanted to push it to the highest level I was capable of doing. And,
okay. Like,
and that was so important. And I mentioned before about content, because I realised when I was creating this, like, the process is very much as important as the finished product.
Yeah.
And I totally believe if I just released that footballs as the finished product, it wouldn't have got the same reception as it has been. I 100% believe that. So capturing all that was tough, because I had to bring in, Garth was a fantastic videographer,
yeah.
And he was such a good guy, because he was so patient with me, because there were some times I'd done a ball and it went to shit. Like,
okay.
Things like Spain, I remember Spain I went for? And I basically went for a technique adding black, because Spain have got a little touch of black into the kit, and especially the test.
Yeah.
And it was red, yellow and white, and I thought, right, a touch of black might just finesse it. In my head, I'm like, right, cool. As soon as I started pouring it, it was shit. It was horrific.
Really?
Yeah, and it took so much time
preparing
it, getting the ball in position, getting it in place, doing the paint pour, getting the paint ready, all those kind of things, because it's not just paint. You need to put the pouring medium, you need to put it water in, you need to get it to a certain kind of condition to flow correctly and stuff like that. And there's so many small elements to it to make the bigger picture. And then I poured it, and I was like, fuck. I was like, Gaff, this is shit. I said, I'm not doing this. So we had to do it all over again. That was about 3 hours of just getting that one ball done.
Yeah.
So, and also the cost of doing a new, because I can't just do the same ball. That ball's wasted.
Yes.
I need to just punt it away, kick out the door.
Yeah.
But
How long time-wise did it take from start to finish
the actual pouring element?
Well, the whole element of all nine.
The whole night, the project, I must have finished it, was it 5 months? I think it the month before the Euros kicked off, because I remember I spent 3 weeks of editing content for
it.
So I'd done a lot of editing in terms of just Photoshopping, lighting that up, getting the correct images for different platforms as well. There was so much for each single ball.
Okay.
So you imagine you get photographs, so you've got like 10 images for, I'm just saying 10 off the top of my head, but 10 of the process, and then you get another 4 or 5 high quality final schedule shots as well. Then things are by 9.
Yeah.
And then you need to do Instagram stories, you need to, I tried TikTok for the first time for the video content, and then I started working at a social media plan towards what games are playing. So I started, what I also thought about is I created that kind of, I customised a typeface as well as part of the project, which was very eloquent and fluid, similar to the pattern of the ball. So I wanted to have a typeface that incorporated that. But what I started to do is, think when I mentioned before the commercial aspect of the ball, so I started to show how these balls could look on a game day graphics. Okay, so it was like right. England v Scotland and the two balls to the side of each other. And also for the type would be used on the video content as well. So at the very beginning, you would see Italy, Sweden, Spain, but you always see that kind of typeface as well. Yeah. So it, the two elements had to be part of one another. And again, creating that typeface as well. So I had to, I was doing that in the background while Garth was doing all the images and editing okay. the video stuff as well. But yeah, 3 weeks beforehand, because I had a date in my mind. It was, I think it was a week exactly before the first game, I believe it was. I launched it. What was it? I can't remember exactly now. And it was like a compilation. I wanted to start. I always think when I do a project, I start, go off big.
Okay.
Go. Was it go hard or go home or that? I don't know why that came to my head, but that's what it was. It was a compilation video. And I posted it on LinkedIn and then all the social media channels. And at the same time, I had to create all this content for sending out to blogs and media companies across the world. I must have sent it to about easily 100 plus, nearly 200 media outlets across the world.
Oh, just really? Saying,
would you be interested in showcasing this project? Now, and also me getting all those sources as well, it's been years in the making, finding all these contacts, building relationships with all these editors and
okay,
of these
yeah.
blogs and media companies and stuff like that. And then from that, the response was unreal. Like, do you know when you believe something enough that it's like you're actually fearful of how it's going to be responded? Like, okay. I got myself so worked up. Like, is this really that good? Like, I believed in it right up to the last minute, and I was about to launch. I think it was the day before, and I was like to my wife, Ali, like, is this really, really that good? Like, is it really? Because I've not shown it to anybody.
Okay.
I kept it very much under wraps, and the only the closest people around me who were always in the studio or whatever
yeah.
had seen it. And every one of them were like, this is pretty awesome, this is special kind of thing. But then, but during that time, there was a lot of self-doubt as well. Like, it's not just all me praising, because there was a lot of moments going, I'm spending a lot of money in here on this, a lot of time. And then you have that fear, is like, am I going to make money back on this? Is it going to go anywhere? But one thing my wife kept saying, like, regardless if it does make you money or it doesn't make you money, or it doesn't get, like, you'll still be proud of yourself. You've done something that you've loved to do.
Yeah.
You've combined your two greatest passions, and it's something you've always wanted to do. So enjoy that moment.
Absolutely,
and that really brought me down to a kind of normality thing. You know what? Fuck it. Like, I know we get caught up in a world of how many likes you get and all that. And I honestly, I kid you not, I don't really care. I really don't. It makes me happy doing these things. And if one person likes it or 1,000 people like it, that's great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't define me or my work or who I am.
Yeah.
So when it did launch, the response, like I say, was off the chain, man. It was just different level. And
absolutely.
I ended up, there are loads of blogs in it, but it was a media outlet that I didn't even expect or even send it to. Like, it ended up going on to, was it Yahoo Movies or something like that? Or
oh, really?
MSN Movies. But what they did is they took the compilation video and turned it into, like, a blockbuster movie trailer kind of
oh,
thing.
Really?
They're like, Craig Black, artist, does this. And I'm like,
that's
fucking hell. This is crazy. Like, it was crazy. And then from that, like, from my initial launch with the compilation, like, I set each single ball, it was like the video one day, and then it was the images the following day, and then changed it up with a different ball kind of thing. And what was so good about the project was I purposely done 9 balls from 9 different countries, so it connected a whole wider audience.
Yeah.
So obviously German fans connected to German ball, but some people, Scottish people connected to Scottish ball, but a lot of people were connecting with different balls in different ways. Like, some of their favourites were like the Dutch, and some were like, I love the Spain. And you're like, that's awesome. And like, it was like feedback I didn't expect as well. And it did reach to a wider market than I ever really thought of.
Yeah.
Like, it just grew more arms and legs. And I'm still, like, that's been over a month and a half now of releasing it. And I'm still getting constant, amazing feedback coming in, which I'm hugely, hugely grateful for. Like, every single message I get or like some of the leading that caught, like saying, this is brilliant, this is really amazing work or whatever, like, I'm genuinely grateful for that, each and every single person doing that. And I hopefully, like, I respond to every single person that does get back to me, or I do like to think I get back to every single person and thank them for that, because they took the time of their day to say that, and it does genuinely mean the world to me. But even from that, the moment where it led to like UEFA getting involved. Like that was just fucking dynamite. Yeah. Like, so from my previous knowledge as well, like in speaking to a few people, like when you see major tournaments such as the Euros and the World Cup and all those kind of things, like usually the marketing and brands have been done 3 years, 4 years prior to the event. So I knew my chances of getting into UEFA or anything like that would have been very slim, because was it like because I've already got stuff, the marketing tail's already there. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to connect with people online like who are in UEFA as well and just say, hey, how you doing? I love what you are doing. Here's something that I've created. Maybe there's something there. And then out of the blue, that was in the early stages. And then a few weeks later, I got this email from the UEFA promo team saying, hey, Craig, we absolutely been talking about you in the background. Absolutely love what you've created. We think it's something absolutely special. How do you feel doing a promo for one of the quarterfinal games coming up? For the Euros. To be honest, mate, when I got that email, it was late on a Thursday evening. I was about, it was about 9 o'clock at night. And I usually don't look at my emails at that point, but for some reason I just felt compelled to check.
Yeah.
And it was like a really nice, beautiful moment, because I was a bit overwhelmed with emotion, actually, to be honest, because you put so much time and effort into something, and deep down, I was hoping something like this would happen. I'm brutally honest. Like, I was really hoping that UEFA would go. If not, I'm still happy with it, but it would be special if that happened. And then it did. And then it was just, like, a kind of overwhelming part, because I did actually cry a little bit.
Oh, really?
And I did, because as creatives, I don't know, I can speak for everybody, I can only speak for myself, but we get so emotionally tied to our work, and it does mean a lot to us, and especially when it comes to artwork, and you put so much effort and your soul and your passion into it, like, you want it to, when people engage with it and they feel the kind of same energy from you and the same sort of love, it's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So when I put all that effort into it and then they kind of said they love it, I was like, fuck, it was like, it was a wee bit of a weight being lifted in a sense as well.
Yes.
So from that moment, we got on a call, lovely, lovely people. I mean, brilliant people, the production team. And we're like, right, okay, we're going for the quarterfinals because it was already at the group stages.
Okay.
And we were predicting who was going to be in the quarters. And we predicted, was it Belgium v Italy? That was the game. That's the one I ended up doing. So this was a week before, the email came the week before that game, and they're like, can we fly you down to London? We'll do this in our studios.
Okay.
And I was like, absolutely, brother, let's do it. So I remember the production manager, Dolores, who was amazing. Like, she organized everything, all the pains, everything that I needed was there. I turned up and it was basically like a treasure chest for me. I was just like, brilliant. But I got there on the Sunday, and I was like, I got my flight out at 12 o'clock and there was a taxi to pick me up or whatever, straight to the studio. And I thought I was only going to be an hour or something, but it was like 6 hours, just nonstop preparing, getting cameras in place, getting everything organized, lighting. Like, it was a totally different level to me in the studio. I mean, it was a lot more, I don't want to say more professional, but it was a lot more high tech, let's say that. And then we done a few test balls just to see how it worked. And I think I'd done the Italy ball, actually, because that was the one I was familiar with, because that night, Belgium, Italy were already through, they were guaranteed.
Okay.
But I think Belgium were playing Portugal, and it's an 8 o'clock game. So I've never done a Belgium ball, or I've never done a Portugal ball yet.
Yeah.
So we had to kind of preempt that we need to organise this, because we were like, who do you think is going to win tonight? And we're like, oh, I think it's going to be Belgium, or it's going to be Portugal.
Yeah.
But there was a guy in the morning saying, I had to basically pick the colours for each country, and there was a guy in the morning who was going to go to B&Q to get the Valspar paint in the morning of the shoot to get the Portugal colours, just in case Portugal got through. But we already had the Belgium. So after the game, basically one of the boys texts me and says, at least we've got Belgium and Italy, so we're all sorted for tomorrow.
Yeah.
So the next day came, and it was, because I was in, and there was only two or three of us, but everybody, the whole studio crew was in. It was like a full-on production team. It was incredible. And word must have spread, like, that I was in the studio or something, because there was more people just saying, we can't wait to see you do this. And then that's when it started to become more than just a nice piece of artwork. It started to become almost a live performance art. Because what happened is I was like obviously on the football and the cameras around it, but there was this huge big TV screen. It was like live playback. And then also I was doing the Belgium ball and I was doing it for the very first time. In my head, I'm going, right, how's this going to work? But
yeah,
I pulled it off and it looked fucking really cool. But then there was about four or five people at that point seeing that and they're like, oh, she's dynamite. And I think they went away and they must have started talking to people because then I was getting prepared for the Italy ball later on that afternoon. And there was like, I don't know, like 12, 15 people just around like watching me doing this. And see the engagement when I was doing it. I was honestly, next level. People were going, fuck it. Like, I keep swearing, I'm probably just saying, but the reaction was, fucking hell, this is cool as fuck. Yeah. Because they're watching it on screen thinking, is this real? And then they're looking at me going, obviously it's real because he's doing it there. But because it's such like high definition on the screen and the technique, it could look like a CGI.
Yeah.
But I think what should have been much more engaging is because it's been all been handmade.
Okay.
And it has its own beauty and authenticity to it that you can never replicate in a CGI environment. I think because they know it's me doing it and they've seen me doing it, like seeing people getting so excited about it as well. Yeah. And I was thriving on that. Like, there was a moment before it, just before we'd done it, and the Italy ball, sorry, and Kez, the cameraman, saying, is there anything we can do to, like, help you get in the zone and all that? And I says, can you put on some house music? Because I always put on house music in the studio, and it just puts me in the zone. And it was blaring. It was blaring when everybody was in. But I was so concentrated. I mean, I was so focused on doing this ball. Because obviously there was a lot of elements. I didn't want to get my hands involved with the camera and stuff like that as well. But it was just amazing to do that kind of performance in front of people as well.
Okay.
And especially when I've been in a studio for the past 6 months doing it on my own, except from Garth, and Garth's probably sick and tired of me now. But that's really opened my eyes up to going, right, how can we take this further? See, like now I'm starting to think about live performance art and doing it in front of an audience and stuff like that. And a lot of brands are seeing that as well and going, because the way I am as a person, I'm quite an enthusiastic and passionate person. Like, it really helps when you're doing these things as well. Like, because you've got to engage the audience. I've got a bit of chat, I can talk nonsense as well. But it's really cool to be able to perform something and bring something to life, a piece of art to life in front of someone. And to be doing it on a football and combining art, it's just been such a wicked experience. And then when I finished that, basically, I had to get everything done by 4 o'clock that day.
Okay.
And then there was a taxi to take me back to the airport and straight up the road to Glasgow.
Right.
So
okay.
I was in the airport and I didn't have time to get changed. I was covered in my paint.
Oh, really?
Okay. And I was exhausted, but I was so buzzing. Like,
yeah.
And then it was 3 days or 4 days later, they had to get it on air for the game. And I didn't see any footage until just before the game kicked off. And then Tom, the producer, sent it through saying, this is it.
Okay.
And I remember sitting, I got it through, and it was just before the game. I said, Ali and my wife, sorry, and Olivia, and we were sitting, put on the big screen, going, right, you ready for this? I've not played it at the same time. And we watched it, and I had the biggest smile on my face. And I looked at Ali, and she said as well, and we were like, how cool is that? And it was dynamite. And it was an actual, real beautiful moment, because what it showed to me is that how well brands can work with the acrylic fusion technique and combining them.
Okay.
So it was like how football footage was working with the paint going through. Like, they've done a tremendous job on it, absolutely tremendous job. And that promo that we did was shared with broadcasters across the world, also sent to, it was shared with the Belgian and Italian football federations that shared it as well. But it was also played live in the Munich Stadium.
Okay.
I think it was before the game, so all the players seen it on the screen and stuff like that. So it was really such a brilliant kind of thing to happen.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, you spoke earlier when it came to the production side, and in the original set that you did that was based on the host countries.
Yeah.
And some of the colour palettes being a challenge to work with, because how similar they were and how you were wanting to obviously give them each their own look. When I was doing a project for you, Wafer, for the for the Euros or based around the Euros. Yeah. For me, it was so working with colour palettes essentially for the same purpose. Yeah. It was the Russia and Spain palettes particularly. Yeah. And also for me, because there was the Germany colours as well, but my application of them was based on the flags, not necessarily the kits. So, yep. Because Germany's home kit is predominantly, you know, the lighter of yep. the colour is the more dominant. But in the German flag, it's obviously yep. Triplicate, so it's an even split. And so, yeah, were there any particular countries that spring to mind when you found their colour palette to be a challenge?
Spain was one. Sweden
oh, really?
Very, very challenging, because when you mix yellow and blue, it
okay.
becomes green.
Yeah, okay.
So I had to work on a technique that tried to not let them merge too much.
Okay.
I did pull it off, but eventually as time went on, there's a lot of touches of green coming through and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it still looked pretty well. So yeah, that was probably the most challenging in terms of getting two colours to work well. The Valspar paste that I used are very, very good in
right.
terms of not mixing too much, because it's such yeah. a high pigment in the paint.
Okay.
So in the way that I use it with the pouring medium and water and all that kind of stuff. So when you pour them together, they're basically like two solid colours.
Okay.
As much as possible. Some don't work so well, some do.
Yeah.
It's just a bit of experimentation, but I would say the probably Sweden one was the most challenging in
okay.
terms of trying to not get them to mix too much.
They were a well-dressed team this competition,
yeah.
I thought. I'm into the Spain site, the Sweden home kit
yeah.
for this year, yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, I was excited for Vegas Latan, because he just came back to the team and
absolutely,
he ended up getting
yeah.
in. He got injured, didn't he? Because he was flying for AC Milan. I'm sure he was top goal scorer in Serie A.
And if I might be wrong on this, but I'm sure he is back there again next season, because it,
yeah.
it was only injury that that really stopped Milan going on and winning
yeah.
the title
yeah.
this year. And he's such a big part of what's happening at
absolutely.
At Milan. So you're absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was actually really getting into Sweden as a dark horse to
yeah.
go further, and I was a wee bit shocked to myself when they got knocked out.
I know they did. Like, again, I keep thinking that if they did have Zlatan, could they have went further?
Yeah.
But again, they may have not gone as further as well, because sometimes when you've got that big player, it can be a hindrance as well.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
Because other players can't shine, because
yeah.
get the ball to Zlatan, get the ball to give the ball to Ronaldo.
Yeah.
They very much what happened with Portugal as well. So I don't know. Hindsight, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Well, and has there ever been a Craig Black, the football player?
Oh, previously, no. Before the time of design and art, like I was a professional footballer for Greenham Morton. So that was like my hometown club.
Mm-hmm.
I played there for 4 or 5 years in the lower leagues of Scotland. And it wasn't as glorious as the dream that I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
I grew up always wanting to be a footballer. That was always a thing. And then
yeah.
it happened at a very early stage. And
sorry to jump in. Greenock, just to describe to people, Greenock Morton playing blue and white stripes, is that right?
Blue and white stripes with a touch of yellow down the sides, I think.
Okay, it's like an accent colour.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
blue and white hoops kind of thing.
Right.
Or stripes, I can't even remember. It's such a long time ago. So yeah, I played there for a while.
What position? Kind of. You don't have to. You know, this isn't you telling us you're as good as this player. But give us a player that is for you. Gives us a picture for the.
I was 16, right? And there was a pre-season game against St. Martin, who is the rival to
yeah.
so they're based in Paisley. And I came on in the last 30 minutes of that game, and I came on at right back.
Okay.
And I played an absolute blinder.
Really?
Probably the best I've ever played.
Okay.
And then after, I remember coming off that game and I was getting the crowd singing my name and all this
oh, really?
Kind of things. Yeah. I think because I was a local boy as well.
Yeah.
And then it came out in the paper saying, what was it? They've called me Cafu, basically.
Oh, really? Wow.
What was it? Trevor said Craigie Cafu or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but it was basically Cafu. And the senior players were coming up to saying, absolutely brilliant. And at that moment, I genuinely thought, this is going to be a catalyst of my football career. And
okay.
I was going to go on. And it was the last pre-season game getting into the season. And I played various other ones, and I'd done really well. I think it was at 16, 17. And for whatever reason, I get started the season was the following week, and I get absolutely bombed.
Okay.
I wasn't even in the squad at all. And that was consistent for the next 2 years.
Okay.
3 years, actually. After getting promise after promise. And it was that moment, the frustration, because the local newspapers were coming out saying, why is Craig Black not playing?
Yeah,
why
okay.
stuff? And it ended up becoming the man. I don't know what happened. Basically, the manager just didn't.
Okay.
No matter how well I played, no matter what I'd done. And
there wasn't any change of manager?
There was a tail end of my time there. Yes, there was, but we were in a relegation dogfight, and the guy, surprisingly enough, the club offered me a contract and said, right, we definitely want to start you this year. And then as soon as I signed, the new manager came in and says, oh, but I want to go for experience. Because I was the youngest in the first team
okay.
at that point. And it was so destroyed. It was really, because I was playing reserve games and I was getting my name match here and there from bloody right back. And there was clubs coming in for me, supposedly. This is what I found out years later. There was clubs coming in making offers for me.
Oh,
and
really?
The club were saying, no, he's one for the future and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't find out anything about it because I was under contract.
Yeah.
And
they weren't obliged in any way to tell you.
Well, maybe they did. There was a part of someone told me I should have been told this, but I didn't. I was a young lad at the time,
and
I never heard about these offers coming in.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
But it really knocked me back. And do you know the other thing as well? Like, even that game, right? It was a great buzz.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me feel whole inside. And
okay.
I don't know if I can ever describe it or anyone can actually understand what I'm meaning by this, but see now, happiness, right? Happiness is a key to life for me, right? I was never like 100% happy when I played football.
Right.
Even when I got to the playing profession, I was never like satisfied.
Yeah.
Or happy, and I felt like something was missing, no matter what, how well I played or whatever. But now with what I'm doing with my art and my design, like I am so happy. I feel
I am
content with that, and I think that was the reason why I left football as well, because at the tail end, it was funny because the club offered me a contract to stay, and I went in and I told them, I was like, listen, I don't even want to play football anymore.
Yeah.
That's how much I didn't enjoy it anymore. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I just don't enjoy this. I really don't enjoy it. And I had offers to go to other clubs and all this stuff, and I said, I've had enough. And then fortunately, when I was first signed my contract, I was still in high school. So I used to train in the morning and go to school in the afternoon to study art and design.
Okay.
And I loved that. I loved art. And that was it always subconsciously, or obviously that was been a big part of my life. But I didn't really know it. And then I was always drawn to football boots and stuff. And then I didn't really think it was a thing. So when I left, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I bumped into my old art teacher. And it's just very, very, I say very shortly, it was literally the day after I decided I didn't want to play football anymore.
Okay.
And I met him in a pub. He's like, how's things? I told him. And he gave me this advice. He says, well, Craig, you were shit at football anyway. Why don't you go study art and design or graphic design at college?
Right.
And I thought, what the fuck's graphic design? And
then
he's like, I'll make a phone call to this college that says to get you an interview. I think it's about late entry. It's a late entry, basically. And I was like, I've not even got a portfolio. He says, last time I was in school with you, 6 years ago. He says, use that. I'm sure it'll be good. And I remember going into the interview for the college course, and I think I showed two pieces of work, and Kenny, who's the lecturer, and he's like, that's you in. I was like, but you've not seen the rest. He's like, I don't need to see that. It's your enthusiasm and passion for this that it's what got you in. And I remember from instantly getting there, that first day of in the college, was I instantly fell in love with design. I felt happy. I was like, this is it for me. And then because I started to see type and lettering it used in ways that I've never seen before. I've seen it. We've all seen it. We've all, it's all around us. But we don't, I, for me, I didn't connect with it the same way I did until I started that college course.
Yeah.
And that was a that was a kind of revelation moment for me.
Is there, it's not the most specific question to ask, but is there, not is there, what would you describe as being the connection to you and typography and lettering? What is it about that field that really has that connection with you?
I think what the early stage got me so interested in it was the versatility of it, how it's used on several different applications from branding to a mural to packaging to everything. And I thought it was really quite interesting because it was so dynamic. And the way that my personality is like, I'll try one thing and I go, oh, but I want to try this as well. But how can I use that fundamental skills from here over there?
Yeah.
And then I thought what was great about typography, especially lettering, is like how you can convey an emotion or connect someone with that brand through typography.
Yeah.
The way that the letter R has a swoosh, a curled leg to it, or how that replicates something else, or
yeah.
That emotional connection was quite interesting to me, and it captured me from an early moment. And for me, when I look at design, it was the kind of main touch point in everything that I've seen. And I thought to myself, like, I would love to create that, like, as an independent Gunnett model. Because what I started to see was independent designers specialising in typography and lettering and working with all these different brands and all these different projects. And I thought, that's cool as fuck. I thought, that is amazing. That is exactly what I want. So from the very early stages of my college course, I knew exactly what I wanted to become.
Okay.
So I ended up, when I graduated, I went to design agencies and got all the experience. But in the background, I was working away, grafting on type and lettering. Project after project. Just when I mean projects, self-initiated projects, I had no clients and just practicing all my craft consistently for about 3 years before anyone took notice of who I was in terms of the type and lettering work.
Yeah.
Because I knew deep down that is what I wanted to do in my career. So it was like 4 or 5 years in the making before I've actually got to launch what I wanted to do. And then now the projects that I do, like in terms of the emotional factor, like the Rangers typeface was, I can't, it's hard for me even express how much it means to me and also my family, because I grew up a Rangers fan, like my whole family is. Winnie Ibrox, like as a young kid, and that was what inspired me to become a footballer. Like, I always remember going against it as a young lad, and my older brother took me. And I always said to him, like, one day, guys, my brother's called Gary, Gaz, and I said to him, one day I'm going to be on that pitch. And in a way, I thought, as a footballer, but I believe that everything happens for a reason. But my true calling was to create the typeface.
Yeah,
that would be. And so, on the field.
And so for those that don't know and haven't been on craigblackdesign.com as they've been listening to us, it was for the beginning of the 1920 season. Is that right, Craig? You designed the official club.
Was it 2020? Was it? Basically, it was a brand evolution for, was it last year? See, because of the pandemic,
the title-winning season.
Oh, the title-winning season. Yes, it was the title-winning season. Yes, it was.
To jump in, that's 2021. That was me. That was me getting it incorrect there. We are in 2021 right now.
Right.
That's agreed between us right now. Rangers are the current champions of Scotland.
Yes.
So 2021. Yeah, that's poor podcast content, because we had to take a time out between two grown men figuring something out. It's simple, but the 2021 season.
So when that project came about, unbelievable, because like I said, I grew up a Rangers fan, loved the club, whole family does as well, friends as well. So when I got that email, I remember getting the email one day, and it was very... It wasn't anything to do with Rangers and email. It was from Seesaw Creative, based in Kilmarnock, who did the branding.
Yeah.
And they reached out to me saying, hey, Craig, we're huge fans of your work. Would you be keen in speaking about doing a typeface for a football club?
Yeah.
I thought, cool, sounds interesting. Like, no, but I kid you not, I didn't even think it would be Rangers. I didn't. Okay. I just didn't. I don't know why I didn't. I just didn't. So I went down to the studio don't know anybody. I've never met anybody before.
Yeah.
Walk into this room and I look at the screen and it says Rangers Football Club. And my instant reaction is, fuck off.
Yeah.
And everybody looks at me and going, is it Rangers? Is this Rangers Football Club? And they all kind of start looking at me and going, is that okay? Are you a Celtic fan? I'm like, no, I'm a Rangers fan.
Yeah.
And just everybody started laughing. So it was a perfect kind of icebreaker. And I'm like, this is unbelievable. So obviously you can imagine it was a very, at that time, secretive project, stuff like that. So the brief was creating a typeface that would be embody the club and the heritage of the club, but brought into a modern world because obviously social media, but engagement with the younger generation, the older generation of fans, but heritage and history is very, very important in doing this project. And I knew it was going to be in the kind of new crest because the previous crest, like the type was kind of slanted over and it was hard to read and stuff like that. So we definitely did know that that was going to be a big point of it. So doing that brief, like, it was quite funny because I don't know, obviously I went to Ibrox as well and got a tour, special tour around the stadium, and there was one point I saw Stevie G's trainers in the locker room.
Oh really?
And in my head I was like, myself, steal them, Craig.
Sorry, this might sound like a really stupid question, but I'm assuming his name was stitched onto the side, and that's how you knew they were his.
No, it was underneath his locker. So they had the locker. He's had Stevie G.
Oh, really?
On the locker. Oh, right. His trainers were there underneath. Right. So I thought to myself, steal their trainers.
What size did they look?
They were a size 9.
Oh, so you looked inside.
I did pick them up, and I thought, oh, why am I picking up Stevie G's trainers? I just had to because I'm like a huge fan. Anyway, I put them down, I left them be. But I got a tour of the stadium and stuff at Trophy Room, which is brilliant. But everything played a part into the typeface because every single detail from the architecture of the Ibrox to the big huge gates, type is on the gates as well. The bluebells, because bluebells are a significant part of Rangers history and stuff like that as well. So I'll play the part into the typeface. So I remember presenting the work to the Rangers marketing team, right?
Yeah.
And I've done two presentations. And the first one, I went out with the guys at Seesaw, and it was a full big brand presentation, but I also came in and talked about type stuff. They brought me in as the specialist. And I openly said to the guys, listen, I've only done one concept here. And the reason why I've done one concept is because I know exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I've been with this club since I was born. I've been great. I feel like I know exactly what needs to be done to take us to the next level. And then I went to the minute details of why this serif is the way this is on a letter A or whatever, any kind of letter. Why is it like that? Thorough detail, all those kind of things. And afterwards, because usually when you do presentations, just like three concepts or whatever kind of thing. But they didn't even say to me, do four or five concepts. I just knew exactly what needed to be done.
Yeah.
I just knew it was crazy. But then when I presented the work and afterwards, the feedback I got right away was crazy.
Sorry.
Sorry, I think I've just learned on my iPad there.
Brilliant, sorry. Basically, the feedback I got was this absolutely embodies the club and the heritage of the club. And it is everything that we need. You look at it and it feels like Rangers.
Yeah.
And
can I just jump in and ask a technical question?
Yes.
While it's still in my head, because I really wanted to today. When you are, so from a technical point of view, when you are, you've had the typeface visual design signed off, what working files do you then produce for that to be a usable typeface that people can kind of install as a font
file and use? I worked with an amazing type designer called Joe Stilstein, based out in California.
Okay.
So Joe is unbelievable. He's vastly experienced and worked with, he's actually worked with the president and stuff like that in the States.
Oh, really?
He's high level. Wonderful guy. So as soon as Ellie was, this project came on, I can't do the technical aspects of creating a font or a typeface because it's in a certain program, a certain working file. What I essentially done is I created it in pencil, created it in Illustrator, and I went to Joe saying, this is what I want to create. Can you finesse this to be a working typeface, basically. So he'd done all of that, and he was like, and it was a great collaboration project with Joe, because he was saying, have you thought about this?
Yeah.
And I was like, great, and it made me think differently as well. But I was pushing him back, going, what about extending that, or this leg, or this width, or this kind of thing. So it was great to work with him on that, because there was a lot of trust involved, because I had to basically give, here's my work, Joe.
Yeah.
You take it on and you do your thing. But it was brilliant, and the constant communication the whole time. But he essentially put it into, I can't remember the software he used.
Yeah, okay.
Like that. Well, in the file format, I should know this. But
no, you've actually answered the question even more deeply than I thought it could be, because that's super interesting for me, because having never worked on such a brief, I didn't know that there is essentially, like, in the same way that if you're working on, say, a web design brief, you've got the designer and then you've got the builder.
It sounds very much the same.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very much the same. And I've clearly stated that with every client I work with. Like, if you think about it, it's almost like a creative director role, when you're given an idea and there's a designer to take that on and flush it out kind of thing. So it was kind of similar kind of process with that. But it was great. And also the seesaw were involved the whole time as well, because it was influencing also the brand elements. And the type, if you look closer, if you look at the line, the claws and stuff like that, is very much replicated in the typeface as well.
Yeah.
That's getting into super minute details.
Ah, well, there we go.
Which is great. So, yeah, following that feedback, I think the first round feedback, it was like maybe extend, it was like the letter B or something like that. It was like various stuff. So it came away absolutely buzzing.
Okay.
And I think it was only about 2 or 3 weeks later, we did another presentation again, and the wider marketing team at Rangers.
Yeah.
And this is where it really hit home for me, actually, was I went up and we presented again, and I went into detail why everything the way it was. And in that meeting, they actually signed off the typeface after the conversation, which is never really happens, is it? Like, usually, like, we'll go away, think about it, and then you get an email and all that kind of stuff. But
I don't know, to be honest, Craig, I've never produced something that has 20 something individual elements. So, I'll nod.
Well, usually it's a bit of like, we'll get back to you. But at this point, they're like, the head of the marketing team was like, listen, like, this is absolutely fantastic. It embodies the club. It's everything that we need. And he says, and I'm very happy enough to sign this off. And everybody was just in total agreement at that moment.
Well, for people to have a better understanding as to how many different applications that has, can you let people know that when a club, or if a club is ever having its own typeface designed and developed, how are they going to use that?
So for Rangers, the typeface has become probably the brand focal point. Actually, it's across many, many touch points. So it goes from the crest itself, so the typeface Rangers Football Club, but it's also used across signage, across the stadium.
Yeah.
And from the outside to banners to any kind of elements inside inside Ibrox as well.
Yeah.
Holdings. It's the typeface is also used on the back of the football tops as well.
Yeah.
So it's back of the strips, only been used in UEFA Europa League and friendlies.
Okay, because the SPL has standard. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Also there's a web font file, so you'd be used across the website design. Okay. Any kind of social media aspects, they use it for YouTube channels.
Yeah.
Basically, any kind of touch point that you Rangers use, in terms of a brand aspect, they will use the
You know what? For me personally, and this is probably because of the mixed European blood in my veins, but if I was to design a typeface for a football club, and it meant as much to me as it does to you, if there was only ever going to be one competition that typeface is on the shirt for, I would want it to be the European competition that club is in that season, because in my mind that would make it ever more special. So that is what I would say to you.
Absolutely.
Good on you, man.
Yeah, man. Like, I think when that project, like, gradually go onto the strips, that's when that's another moment actually at home. Just to go back on, actually, like, when they signed it off in that meeting, I don't know, stupid thing, man. Like, I was so exterior, cool and collected. Inside, I was jumping about in joy. Honestly, I was like buzzing. And at the end of the meeting, for some reason, I just kind of went, put my arm up in the air, instead of going, yeah, it's like a celebration. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? But everybody started laughing, right? Because it was such an amazing and emotional moment. So everybody was like, kind of an icebreaker again with the marketing team and all that stuff. And I had a stupid big grin on Facebook. Yeah. See, when I got outside, I went in my car and I looked up at the stadium. And I think that was another moment that was a total realization of what I've just achieved.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be something that's going to be part of this club for the next, hopefully, next 60 years or even longer.
Yeah.
I'm quite an emotional guy and I was overwhelmed with emotion at that point because I've just achieved a life dream. Do you know what I mean? I really have. But the world hasn't even seen it yet.
Yeah.
So, and then the next moment is when you were talking about the kits, when Rangers played the first Europa League game and it came out. I can't even remember who it was against, but I can remember every moment of seeing that type and I was going, the delight and the people who were texting. Like, I was getting constant phone calls and text messages from people all over the world going, how fucking cool is it your type is on the back of Rangers top, from fans across the world, Rangers fans specifically, obviously.
One thing that I've noticed again in this tournament, and talking about being an emotional guy, and I don't know if working in the creative field as we do kind of fuels this, but I get so into the a good national anthem of another country, and if I see players, specifically players, really going for it, like when I see the Italian national anthem, I well up, and I let myself go with it, you know. But like national anthems and at sport and, you know, football tournaments and occasions are the perfect times for that. But that gets me every time, national anthems at football tournaments,
Yeah, definitely. I remember the times because they all went nuts. They were shouting ball and I loved it. You feel the passion right through. And it just gears you up, doesn't it? It gears you up, sorry. And you're just like, let's do this.
Absolutely.
And then you get some people who try to act cool on camera, don't you? Or the players who don't sing, or the ones who actually don't know the lyrics and stuff like that.
So I let my imagination wander, as it does often in any given situation, and imagine myself, you know what? If I was stood up in that lineup in the final of a major tournament representing my country, I can't imagine not just going for it.
Yeah.
And if I have tears running down my face and people can see, just I am letting loose at this moment. But then again, you know, for athletes that have reached that level, having that kind of experience is probably far more normal for them than it would be for me right now.
Probably. We're just a bubbling wreck that we are.
Oh, well, you know, we've got our imaginations to think of it, you know. Well, you spoke earlier about drawing footballs a lot when you were a kid. Was there a particular boot, or is there a particular boot or boots that
The ones that always stand with me, remember the R9 boots?
Yes.
From Nike back in the day.
Yeah.
I used to love them, man. I love them. But I used to draw on boots.
Well, and so they were Ronaldo's 98 boots for people.
Everyone knows it's the real Ronaldo, don't they?
Yes.
The Brazilian one.
Oh, I just say Ronaldo because, he's the other one.
Those are the ones that kind of, I thought they were out of this world, like kind of creatively and stuff like that. I really did think it was really sweet. But I started customising boots when I was younger and stuff like that. I remember getting a shitey gold marker pen and used to, and my first boots was a pair of Mizuno's size kids 3, and then I used to colour in the Mizuno sign in gold.
Oh really?
My mum still has them, and when I do talks and stuff, I bring that up because I've come full circle, because now I've actually customised the football boots for Euro and stuff like that. And
it's funny you mentioned about working with Pantofolo Deloro.
Deloro?
I know I was saying that with a question. Sorry, I'm actually just I'm bringing this up now because as I look at Craig in what is my lounge, on the shelf kind of to his right-hand side, there is a Pantofolo Doro. I'm adding an L for no reason. I've just read it on the side of the box. But as we were setting up, I was thinking, I wonder if there's going to be a moment when either of us bring up Pantofolo boots and there's that box.
Here's the moment.
Just behind you, yeah. Well, here is the moment, yeah.
So here's the moment. So how that came about as well, I'll give you a brief insight, Liz. I always wanted to be commissioned to create football boots.
Okay.
Or customised football boots. And I thought, if you want a brand or someone to hire you for something, you need to showcase like what you're capable of doing, in a sense, right? So I created this idea, started off the early Fusion series, and I basically dipped these blank Pantofolo Doro football boots in this kind of red and white paint, put it all together, looked pretty cool, put it online, self-initiated work.
Yes.
They seen it, reached out going, we want to do a collaboration. And I'm like, dynamite, because that's exactly what my purpose was, to get their attention to say, let's do something. And what transpired is obviously the Rangers project was finished at that point, and Kim Williams, who's the head of Pantofolo Doro, and he says it a much cooler way than I did. I can't even pronounce it right. I don't even know. Yeah. I'm probably murdering it because my Scottish accent.
Yeah.
But we were talking about, obviously, Rangers were on the cusp of winning the league, and I thought, well, this could be a great opportunity to create a gift, because I've had the connections to Rangers from the previous project to get it to them, and it would help obviously with the brand, and we could do something pretty cool kind of thing. So Kim was absolutely all over this, and we were talking about the acrylic fusion paint technique as well. Yes. We're literally paint pouring over them, and she's like, oh, I can send you like tons of boots and we can experiment. And then he ends up sending me one pair of boots.
Oh,
like,
really?
Kim, I was like, and the thing is, there's a deadline, because we had to get it done before the last game, because if any after the last game, like the momentum would have went down.
Okay.
Kind of thing. So it was all the PR marketing opportunity right there. So the pressure was on me again to deliver and doing it on this one pair of boots. I just thought, fuck it, I'm gonna just go for it.
Yeah.
No test, no nothing, just went for it. Obviously done it in Rangers colours. And then created this gift set for Stevie G, but made a showcase of it. So images, put it on the percentage blogs. And Rangers fans absolutely loved it. And they were all, but I promise to say this is a one-off pair, because I don't know if you put them on and kicked a ball with them, I don't know if they'd be They might do well, but after one game, they could be falling to pieces. But it could lead to a commercial line in the future, who knows? It was great. Another great way of combining giving a gift to Stevie G through Pantofolo Doro.
I'm going to put you on the spot with a technical question here.
Yeah.
If someone was at home and had, say, a plain pair of boots that they wanted to do something a wee bit jazzy with, if someone was to apply their own acrylic paint to it, but would then like to be able to at least wear them once, and what could be a... Would there be like a home fix that you could at least give a finish in the way that you used to use hairspray to fix charcoal drawings?
My recommendation would be, if you're going to use any kind of paint, the Valspar paint, which you get in B2, and the V700 range, which is the top range, because of the high pigment of it, because it also has a primer inside it as well, so it helps to solidify it and stuff like that as well, and also with the mixing and stuff. So if you use that, great, pull that on the boot, and then once it dries, you could technically put on like a matte varnish.
Okay.
I think I've got like it's a Windsor matte varnish you get in art craft stores or whatever.
Okay.
You could use that to seal it. And go for it. The boot actually bends pretty well.
Okay.
I ended up doing a test boot afterwards, but it's like kind of extra paint I had. And it still bends.
Okay.
Well.
Right. Yeah.
And it still keeps condensed. But I don't know. I would love to, if someone does it and experiments and plays, and please let me know how you get on.
Yeah.
It might be an opportunity to make more of them.
Absolutely.
Because it was funny when the Pantofolo were like, oh, Could people buy this and wear them? I'm like, I have absolutely no idea. Like, but yeah. We've not had the opportunity to test and stuff like that. So maybe in the future could be. But who knows? I think what was really special about it is the actual hand-painted element to it.
Okay.
Because technically you could do a commercial print, or you could digitally scan it and then print it on.
Yeah.
And be about that way. It could, but I think what makes that so special is the process to the finished product. And then at the back and the heel, you actually see the paint, the hardened paint drips and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the three stars, I think it's three
stars. It's three stars, isn't it?
Three stars in the heel. Can still come through, and there'd be slight painted parts over it. So I love that element to it. Nice. The heel is actually my favourite element of the boot, which you have to see.
Okay.
Because you see the underneath boot, but you see the overlapping paint just covering some elements to it.
Okay.
And that's what I love about my work. You see with the footballs as well. Like at the very bottom of the Fusion footballs is where the adapter goes to come up the boot.
Yeah.
The ball, sorry. But the paint doesn't fully wrap around. You see that one panel at the bottom. And you see the paint handling round it, that one kind of hexagon element to it. And I love that.
Really?
I love
that. Yeah.
Because what it does is when you see it in real life, you see it's genuinely a piece of artwork.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not like something you just go and buy, I suppose, direct.
It's just been
It's been genuinely been created. And I love that authenticity to it, that it's not perfect.
Yeah.
And it shows it has its craft, it has its element, and I think it stands true to itself and its value and authenticity again.
Good for you. And what you have achieved with Pantofolo is exactly what I would love to do with a goalkeeper glove brand, so just a wee shout out to any goalkeeper glove brands listening out there. Craig, could you please remind everybody where they can follow your work and look at your work and just...
Certainly. So you can go to craigblackdesign.com. Instagram and Twitter is @_CraigBlack. LinkedIn, type in Craig Black, find artist and designer, and lettering and typography. I'm sure you'll find my cheesy wee mug on there.
There we go.
That's where you can find me. Please connect. Please say hello. I'd love to speak to people who say hello and see what they get up to as well. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
Brilliant. Well, Craig, it's been a delight and thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed this.
Good man.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.